Welcome everyone to Freedom Law School's weekly conference call on this Thursday, June 1st, 2017. This is Peyman Mutahedeh, the founder and president of Freedom Law School, and your host for this weekly program. Every Thursday night at 7 o'clock in the evening, Eastern Time Zone, I conduct these weekly conference calls in which I first educate you about a very important issue of law that affects you, your rights, your freedom, and your money and property. And then I will go into the second phase of the conference call in which I do my best to answer your freedom questions. Whether it's the IRS harassing you, a state income tax agency, traffic tickets, abuse of power of any kind by any kind of a government agent or agency, I'm here to assist you to live free. If you have not been to our website at livefreenow.org, you want to do that, and be sure to get on there on our email list. So you're going to get the free Freedom Education Package sent to you at no charge. And you're going to get educational material sent to you once or twice a month that you will not find any place else on there in the Internet. It's just not there. Unique material that you can only find through Freedom Law School to help you live free. Freedom is the thing you're looking for. Freedom, prosperity, peace. Freedom Law School is your source. Now, at Freedom Law School, there's two key things I talk about a lot. One is that our money system is absolute fraud in that the big banks, Chase, Citi, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Goldman Sachs, these guys collectively own the New York branch of the Federal Reserve, which is the head of the Federal Reserve banking system cartel, which together with the banks, allows the banks to make money out of thin air, literally counterfeiting money. No different than you go in your garage and printing money. They do that. And they lend it out to you, other American people, businesses, even the U.S. government borrows money to spend because all the money in our system is created by the banks out of thin air. Fractional reserve banking. I know you don't know what it means. Don't worry about it. You can look it up on YouTube if you want fractional reserve banking scam. Okay, but basically, they charge an entire economy interest because all the money in the system is being lent out of thin air by them. Trillions of dollars. And that's how come, if you think about it, 1900, we did not have almost none of the inventions we have today. No internet, smartphones, computers, television, radio, airplanes, automobiles, motorcycles, paid off their house after maybe 10 or 15-year home loan. And they had more time to enjoy life with their family members. On top of that, the wife was always home. She did not have to go get a job outside in the corporate world, second income to support the family. Too many Americans are not having enough children or children at all because they simply cannot afford to have children because the wife has to go work out there. Why? With all technological advances? Because you've been ripped off by the banksters. And the income tax system was set up by the same crooks that created the Federal Reserve and our money system. The funny thing is, the Federal Reserve system is illegal and unconstitutional, and there is no law that requires the average American like you or me to file and pay the federal income tax. And I always tell everybody, do not believe the government. Do not believe me or anyone else on the Internet. I will show you folks how to look up and read the law for yourself. Almost always, I can get you to a government source itself to read the law. You can read the law at house.gov, gpo.gov. These are U.S. government sources of laws. Supreme Court cases are easy to find out there nowadays on the internet. It's a revolution of information, folks. You have to go. I had to go to a law library 20 years ago to look up court cases and codes and statutes. No longer. It's available now on your smartphone, personal computer, tablet, easily nowadays. So, folks, we can confront the government with their lies, with their breaking the law that's written by Congress. So Freedom Law School is going to empower you to use the law to your advantage to live free. So, folks, the topic of the Commerce Clause tonight is about when you should respond to an IRS letter and when it's best to ignore them. By the way, if you have any urgent questions, situations, you can always call Freedom Law School. Our number is 813. But this is one of the most common questions people have. You know, even though there is no law requiring you to file income tax, when should you respond to an IRS letter? And when it is best to simply ignore them? Well, that's some question I'm going to answer for you tonight. Now, there's a different situation if you file or don't file a 1040 income tax confession form. I declare that there is no law requiring the average American to file and pay income tax. In fact, I've had a $300,000 income tax reward for 18 years. 18 years available through Freedom Law School. If anybody can show me the legal authority behind the imposition of income tax on the average American. The law is written properly, it's only been misapplied to the American people. It applies basically to the foreigners, not to Americans working here. I've covered this issue in the Commerce Calls earlier in 2017. So if you go to Freedom Law School's YouTube channel, and you're going to see all these Commerce Calls there, I cover these issues in more detail. Feel free to go there, check them out, listen to them. Common question people have is, well, I got this letter from the IRS. What do I do? Do I respond to it or do I not respond to it? Well, the first thing to keep in mind is this. The most important thing is, generally speaking, anything that comes certified, you should seriously consider responding to it. Anything that is not by certified mail, you probably should consider very much ignoring it. That's right. They have to give it to you, something that really you have to respond to by law, by certified mail, registered mail, or in-person delivery. Unless it comes that way to you, you don't have to respond to it. Because by law, the IRS does not have to respond to you. The IRS does not have to respond to you whenever you want to talk to them. Legally, they don't. Now, they may talk to you for a little bit, you know, to be courteous, but if you insist, legally, they don't have to respond to you. They don't have to talk to you. They do not have to respond to your letters either. They may not. But a letter that is sent to you by certified mail, it's a legal letter. The letter that by law, the IRS must send out to you before they can go forward to try to harass you, fix amount of tax on you, get your bank or other third-party records, or steal from you. And when they do that, the legal opportunity is created for you to challenge the IRS, and they have to come and respond to you. Personal delivery, you probably have to respond to it. If it's not, you don't. Now, the certified letters that they come, they are three kinds. Okay. The first one is the IRS summoning you or a third party for information about you. So that is when they want records to use against you, whether the information is provided by a third party or by you. They want to use that information against you. Now, if it's a bank or a third party they want information from, you can generally go to the federal district court and try to stop that. Quash the IRS summons, so the third party does not have to give the information to the IRS. A petition is a request. A quash means it's to destroy. Like you quash an ant with your shoe. That's what it means, basically. Now, the thing is, most people do not know this, that even though you are given the opportunity to stop the IRS from getting your bank records, filing a petition with the U.S. District Court within 20 days of the date of the summons was served on you or given to you by personal delivery, because that's what they have to do. In practice, you will not be able to win that case 99% of the time. And the reason for that, the primary reason for that, is because there was a crooked U.S. Supreme Court case called U.S. versus Miller in 1970 catalog that you get on your free freedom education package or freedom law school you get. U.S. versus Miller. In that case, the U.S. Supreme Court crookedly ruled that when you use a bank account and you use checks, they were talking about checks at the time, okay? but it applies now to credit cards or any of the bank instruments, okay? In U.S. versus Miller, the court claimed that because you allowed the bank employees who are strangers to you, you don't know who they are, they could be anybody off the street to hire, okay, to see your checks, your private, you have no expectation of financial privacy. Therefore, you don't mind if the government gets it either. Now, I know that sounds ridiculous, but that's a ridiculous, crooked, corrupt logic these judges use to expand the government's power, the corrupt system, and violate you, the American people's rights. Now, I'm going to read for you the exact wording of that case. U.S. versus Miller, in fact, I give the citation. It's a 1976 case, 425 U.S. 435. You can go online, type in United States v. period, Miller, 425 U.S. 435, 1976. It'll come up. And the court says this is the exact word. There is no legitimate, quote, expectation of privacy, unquote. Contents of the original checks and deposit slips, since the checks are not confidential communications, but negotiable instruments to be used in commercial transactions. So that was the first part of the excuse, that the checks are used for commercial transactions. So when you buy something online for food, you know, or some personal user magazine, you're involved in a commercial transaction, which is nonsense. It's personal transaction. But the crooked court it's as if it's all commercial transactions. Basically, only business commercial people use checks, which is not true. People use it not for personal transactions. And here's the interesting part I told you about. And the court continues. All the documents obtained contain only information, check this out, voluntarily conveyed to the banks and exposed to their employees in the ordinary course of business. So you voluntarily conveyed to the banks and exposed to their employees your financial affairs in the course of the business. And so the crooked court says the Fourth Amendment does not prohibit the obtaining of information revealed to a third party and conveyed by him to government authorities. In other words, the government cannot come to you to get your personal records in your home or house because the Fourth Amendment guarantees you're secure and safe in your papers. But when you use a third party like a bank, you voluntarily give the bank that information. So you don't care if the government gets that information from, not you, but from that third party like the bank. So folks, that's one reason, folks. Another reason, the banks are your enemy. The banks and the government are in cahoots in bed together to violate you and your rights and your property. Minimize user banks so there would not be anything there. That's the whole subject, folks. I cover in our course called A Practical Road to Freedom from Oppressive Taxation and Control, Level 1. It's 9 classes in class number 9. I cover this issue in more detail. So the bank records, you can basically, not stop. In most cases, if they follow the proper procedures, they're using only for tax purposes, they follow some very basic, simple procedures they're required to follow, basically, they can get your bank record. If the IRS summons you, yourself, to show up to meet with the IRS agent to give information about you, then you have to show up. Actually, you don't have to show up, but it's better if you show up. Because the summons has no power by itself because it's issued by the executive branch of the government. But the IRS can go to the government, to the court, and ask the judge to enforce the summons. And the judge will ask you for the reason why the summons should not be enforced. And basically, whatever you say, the judge says, for the most part, nope. You got to at least go show up. So why go before the judge? Just when the IRS asks you, go ahead and show up. And then you can stop the summons there by taking the Fifth Amendment objection to the IRS's question. Nearly always, you can do that completely legally, one question at a time. That is the proper way that the crooked court says you have to do it. You don't have to get Fifth Amendment to everything and say, well, everything I say could be used by the government to put me in prison. Nope. The crooked courts have said you have to do it one question at a time. So if the IRS asks you 100 questions or 500 questions, you may want to take a Fifth Amendment objection to 99 out of those 100 questions. Or all 100 of them, perhaps. Depends. Go out of 500 questions to 495 of them. Or 499 of them. Or 500 of them. You may answer a couple, a few totally harmless questions, perhaps. That's a game you better should play. Basically, I cover that issue in an article I wrote on how to beat an IRS summons every time. That will be provided to you in the free education that you get from Freedom Law School by email. It will be sent out to you as one of your material that you'll be getting. And so I'll cover that issue in more detail, how to properly assert the 50 records to the IRS that they may use to potentially put you in prison. Because the Fifth Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, folks, one of the things that it does, it says that you cannot be forced to give any information to the government in any kind of a situation that potentially could be used against you in a criminal case, period. O.J. Simpson, the football star, was put on trial. You saw it on TV, many of you. He was charged with murder and did not say anything at all during his trial because he had the right to remain silent. The police, when they arrest you, they put you under arrest, they give you your rights. They read you your rights, which is you have a right to be silent and a right to a lawyer as well. That's the Fifth Amendment right to be silent. They tell you about. They're required to tell you. So that's the basics of how summonses works, folks. Price summons goes to a third party to seek information from you or about you, I should say. And the first party summons is served on you yourself to get information from you, about you, to be used against you. And you can successfully give them nothing. The other common situations are if the IRS wants to take your house, they have to serve a lawsuit to you in person or some other suit. Or if they want to, if they've taken your stuff first, and like a Jeopardy assessment is when they take your stuff and then they give you a chance for a hearing because they're afraid that you're going to leave the country perhaps with all your money and take off and never come back. They can do that. Then they give you a notice of deficiency for you to challenge the IRS after they take your stuff. But usually the other case that the IRS sends a letter to you by certified mail is a notice of deficiency. And a notice of deficiency is basically a formal tax proposal letter. And by law, if the IRS wants to come after you with a number, tax assessment number they want to throw at you, they have to send that letter to you. The audits do not matter. That's why I covered this before in these commerce calls. You can shut down any audit cold with one simple letter saying, do not write to me anymore, do not call me, do not visit my place of work or my home. If you want to come after me, go ahead, send me a notice of deficiency, and I will go to tax court and deal with somebody else there, not you. Because by law, the person who's doing the audit cannot be part of the tax court case. They cannot come after you. So that's the second situation that we talk besides summons, the key one. A notice of deficiency has to be sent to you by certified or registered mail. And you have 90 days to challenge the IRS in tax court. By the way, on that issue, one thing, argument that's a lot out there in the freedom movement, in the patriot movement, is people say, oh, tax court is a kangaroo court, admiralty court, statutory court, administrative court, and you don't want to get the court jurisdiction. You want to stay out of the court and government's jurisdiction. So do not go and petition a tax court because you are a non-tax common law. You're a sovereign citizen or state citizen or sovereign state citizen. Or you reserve your rights under UCC, Uniform Commercial Code. Or, you know, that is only for your straw man, for your name and capital letters, debt, corporate, fictional entity. Not you. Your name is upper lowercase, not the all capital name they came up with and put on the notice deficiency. It's not you. They want to trick you in the jurisdiction by having to go to tax court. And on and on and on, all these arguments of patriots that you want to stay out of their jurisdiction, as if you do that, they don't have power over you. But they do have power over you, folks. They do have jurisdiction. Okay, this is one of the biggest misunderstandings of the patriot movement I'm going to explain to you guys, which everybody should understand. I want you to go to the computer, folks, or your smartphone, bring up your internet browser. I'm going to have you type this up and read it. Okay, together with me. Type in 26 USC space 7421. I repeat, 26 space USC space 7421, which is title or category 26 of the United States Code, section 7421. Now, when you type it up on your internet browser, on your smartphone, personal computer, laptop, tablet, it'll come up. For me, although Cornell Law, law.cornell.edu comes in first, I'd rather go down to the government website anyhow. Go and scroll down for me, number five. I use duckduckgo.com. I don't use Google, folks. Don't use Google. Google is censoring the internet. They've hired 10,000 people. So on controversial political subjects, the most common answers that people are looking and finding don't come up in the first two pages of the search. Yes. The Big Brother of 1984. Again, George Orwell's 1984 is out there making sure that you don't find the truth that is out there, but find a truth that they want you to see only. So go ahead and go to the one, DuckDuckGo.com, use that one. Section House.gov, let's go. Put your mouse on that, click on the right tab, open link in a new tab. And you go to House of Representatives. Website, uscode.house.gov. And here's what it comes from, Title 26, Internal Revenue Code, Section 7421, prohibition of suits to restrain assessment or collection. And here's what it says, A, tax, the heading. Except as provided in sections, there's about 10 different sections listed there. Okay, I'm not going to read all these code sections. Doesn't matter. So basically, except as provided in these particular sections, in 10, 12 sections listed here, no suit, means no lawsuit, for the purpose of restraining the assessment or collection of any tax shall be maintained in any court by any person, whether or not such person is a person against whom such tax was assessed. You understand that, folks? That section basically says that you cannot go to court. Nobody can go to any court to stop the IRS from fixing or assessing amount of tax on you or collect the tax on you, steal your money, except these about 10, 12 sections on the list here. That's it. Those about 12 code sections, folks, are your only refuge. Judge will not help you. So in other words, a court, the government said to me in this law that your property is government's property. You are a slave. The master government can at any time take your property. They're going to fix an amount of tax on you called assessing the tax or determining the tax, and then steal it from you anytime. You cannot stop them, except within these dozen or so code sections. You didn't know that, did you? That was not taught to you. This law makes us all a slave. The government has jurisdiction, power, anytime to steal your stuff, with the exception of these dozen or so code sections that they themselves said, oh, in these cases, we'll leave you alone, okay? And I'm not going to spend too much time on this. I just want to mention that two of those code sections are Section 6,200 6,212A and 6,213A. And those sections basically say that when the IRS sends you a notice of deficiency, a tax proposal, the IRS cannot collect anything from you. But the IRS must send you a notice of deficiency if they claim, if they believe you owe them money. They will issue that letter to you. They cannot collect anything from you at that time. And if you do go to tax court and give the tax court jurisdiction, now you are under protection of a court, the tax court, that has the power to stop the IRS from going forward. The IRS cannot assess, determine, or fix a tax on you, or steal your money, period. If they attempt to do so, the tax court does have the power and jurisdiction to hit the IRS over the head to stop from assessing a tax, stealing your money, and fork over back, give your money back. So, given this situation, why would you not want to go to tax court? Because you didn't know. That's the only reason people don't go to tax court. The only reason patriots do not go to tax court is because they don't know. They've been misled by all these patriot mythologies. What's a patriot mythology? A patriot freedom theory that sounds good. Feels great. Makes sense. But it's completely baseless. And you will find websites and YouTube videos that talk about this stuff, like UCC and sovereign state citizenship versus U.S. citizenship and national citizenship, and not using zip code on your mail, and straw man, and redemption, and repatriation, and you name it all capital letters, and adhesion contracts, and not, you know, revoking, canceling your social security number, and giving notices to the principal an agent in all his letters, and demanding that they answer you, demand that they show jurisdiction over you, that they cannot do all that stuff. It's all as baseless as a tooth fairy and the Easter bunny theories. They're all fairy tales, because you will find dozens, if not hundreds of pages on internet talking about and discussing the tooth fairy and Easter bunny. Doesn't make them real. You may have thousands of internet pages. Talk about them. But the one fundamental key thing you have to remember is there is no such thing as Tooth Fairy or the Easter Bunny. By the same token, folks, you're all state and U.S. citizen at the same time. And the national citizenship people make you think of it. It's not a big deal. That's like American Indians or people from Puerto Rico. And Uniform Commercial Code has nothing to do, your UCC, at all with income tax. And the bank, so-called bankruptcy in the United States in H.R. 192 was not a bankruptcy in the United States. And using zip code on your mail, it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean anything. And your name printed out in IRS letters, in all cap letters, there is no such thing, you know, as these are not admiralty maritime courts. And there's no, these courts that we have are statutory and common law courts combined. There are no separation of statutory courts and common law courts. The current courts are both. All these things out there, folks, are things to watch out for. Bottom line is, you get a notice of deficiency, very likely the best thing for you to do is to go to the U.S. IRS, must send out to the correct address, you know, and because of that, you should let the IRS know your address. Yes, you should. I know you want to hide from them. I know you don't want to hear from them, and I hate them, too. I wish they would leave me and you alone, but guess what? IRS Code Section 6212 and 13 say basically that the IRS has to send that letter to your last address that they have of you. And if they do that, you had your chance to challenge the IRS in tax court. Otherwise, you lose your chance, and now talk about later on in a perhaps a collection due process hearing case. So that's the problem. You got to, unfortunately, let them know where the address is. If you're a filer, when you file a 1040 confession form, income tax confession form, you always give them your address on the form anyhow. But if you don't, you should, when you move, send a letter by certified mail to the IRS. Keep a copy of the certified receipt stub and your letter informing the IRS of your correct latest address. The IRS, because the IRS does not have your new address, and they come to me messed up shape because they say, I didn't hear for anything from the IRS for 4 years, for 7 years, 8 years. It's all good. No news is good news. Oh, by the way, I sent them a letter challenging their jurisdiction, telling them they have no power over me. I showed them the law. They left me alone. And all of a sudden, they're not letting my paycheck, my bank account, my commissions. What do I do, Paymon? And I got to tell them, sorry, my friend, you messed up. Your letters did not work. They were ignored. And the IRS, you did not hear from them because the IRS letters, the notice of deficiency, went to your old wrong address. And therefore, you lost the opportunity to be able to charge the IRS for them not to be able to come after your paycheck. So, very important, everybody. Remember, to give your change of address to the IRS by certified mail, keep record of that. So now that we covered those, there's one last area that the IRS will send you certified letters. It's called the collection due process hearing. Now, if you go on this IRS code section 7421 we just read, you see two of those code exceptions they mentioned. It's IRS section 6330E1 and 6331I. Basically, what these are is a collection due process hearing laws statutes. Essentially, before the IRS can go take your bank account, paycheck, commissions, anything, or within 5 days after the IRS files a lien against you, IRS must, to ask for a hearing with a letter, giving you 30 days to ask for a hearing. It's called the collection due process hearing. In that hearing, you can come up with alternative payment plans. You can maybe convince the IRS you have no money, or you can maybe be able to challenge the tax again, you know, redetermine the amount of tax, or maybe even void the tax altogether if the IRS did not follow all the proper administrative procedures that the IRS is required to file. Essentially, it's your last chance to challenge the taxes, challenge the IRS. So that's a hearing you definitely almost always, even more than a notice of deficiency, you should and do want to ask for a hearing to challenge the IRS. Again, there are exceptions to all of these at times. Other strategies may be existing that may not make it 100% rule all the time. But I would say 99% of the time, you want to ask for a hearing from a notice deficiency or a collection due process hearing. Other than that, folks, if the IRS sends you a letter by first class mail, you simply have no requirement to respond. If you want, you can, but you don't have to. Okay, you don't have to meet with them. You don't have to give the IRS your records. In fact, you don't even have to respond to IRS's letters. One of the scariest letters that the IRS sends out to people, people call me and say, the IRS sent a letter to this agent, says, I have a meeting I've set up at your home at on this date at this time. So, and the person wonders, what should I do? The IRS is coming to my house on this date and time. What do I do? Well, you can respond to them. You can meet with them if you want to. But you know what? Them at all. There's no law requiring you to even respond to them. And also, there is no law that requires you to be there at home when this IRS agent chooses to come by your house to want to meet with you. You don't even have to answer the door or be there. So you may want to just not be there. That might be the easiest thing, you know, because I know people sometimes tell me, oh, hey, man, I just didn't answer the door. And our agent came to my window, looked in the window to see if anybody in the house, you know, and that type of thing. Now, if you don't want to deal with that, just don't be there. Usually they come during work hours, 9 to 5, and you're at work anyhow, most people, during daytime, just don't be there. You don't have to be there for the IRS's convenience. So, ignore the IRS letters. Believe it or not, you can simply ignore the IRS's visitation letters. Visit with you, audit you. What if the IRS writes a letter to you, wants these records from you? They want your bank records. They want to copy your tax returns. They want to copy your statements, books and records of all sorts. Oh, my gosh. They think about anything you potentially could have. And they want you to give it all to them. Make a copy of every aspect of your life. Talking about slavery, folks. This tells you how we've been reduced to slaves. Because the master can require of those things. Well, very limited area, limited years, and limited issues. Yes, cannot expand the audit to other years. They cannot expand to other issues that were not originally brought up. They first want to make sure that, you know, you have these business expenses, for example. You know, make sure you really have that much of a utility bill that you claim you have. You know, electric bill and internet bill, for example. Well, in tax court, they're going to question that only and remains that only. They don't like you to fish around for more stuff from you like an audit can. Audits can go on and on and on. And on and on and on. Cause a lot of heartache, headache, and expense. And guess who's happy? The IRS agent. He gets to look good to his manager. He's working. He's doing something that might lead to somewhere. Yeah. Who else is happy? Well, the tax professional that you hired. That he believe in thing he's here, your bookkeeper, accountant, CPA, certified public accountant, enrolled agent, tax lawyer. Because IRS asking for stuff, they say, you better give it to them. They want this, they want that. Sorry, we can't do nothing about that. If they want it, you got to give it to them, you know. They don't tell you that you can just blow the IRS off, whew, whack them over the head. I don't want to hear from you. Send me a notice deficiency if you want. I'll go see somebody else from the IRS and tax court under pressure by the IRS lawyer, under pressure by the judge to settle these cases reasonably and fairly. So these guys get to make money off of you. I remember back in 1992 when I first heard about income tax being a fraud and a lie and a scam. And I was interpreting Persian language for this Persian lawyer in Santa Ana, California. And I was going to start talking about, hey, have you heard about income tax being a fraud? There's no law requiring the average American to file income tax. And before I could finish my sentence, he said, Payman, don't tell me about the IRS. Because he's a lawyer. I thought he should know, right? He should know the law. A lawyer can look up the law easily, you would think, right? He was one of those, you know, guys dealt with, you know, other stuff, like car accidents and stuff like that. He said, Payman, don't tell me. I've been under audit for the IRS for the last year and a half. And my own accountant, CPA, has been over $100,000. Think about that, folks. His own CPA fees to help him with the IRS was over $100,000 25 years ago. In today's money, that probably is close to $300,000. That's not even the IRS. These guys make money off of you, these tax professionals. Are you ignorant? Okay? You don't have to be worried about that stuff, folks. Freedom Law School teaches you, makes it affordable for you to understand law and your rights. And hopefully you can do a lot of it yourself, folks. My goal always was, and has been still in this day, to help you help yourself. Fish for yourself as much as possible. But I know sometimes situation gets complex or difficult, and Freedom Law School is available to help you if you have a situation that you want Freedom Law School help, that can get this stuff done right. But let me help you understand your situation, folks. And if you can and willing to do it yourself, great. You can do it yourself. Okay? And so let me segue into our website. Go to Freedom Law School's website, folks, okay? Go to livefreenow.org, okay? Livefreenow.org, Freedom Law School's website. Because this is the education you're going to want to get, folks, all of you, no matter what, okay? Go under on the right near center. Go to Course Packages. And when you go there, you see Royal Freedom Package. Go down, Simple Freedom Package. Beginner's Freedom Package, Quick Start Freedom Package, A Practical Road to Freedom. That's the one I want you should have had before graduating from high school, before you turn 18. Because this course is a course of action for those who are committed to living a free life. And it contains 9 classes on law and procedures that will empower you to start living free today. You see the table of contents of those 9 classes there. 8 of them are on audio, about 2.5 hours each. Class number 4 is on video, about 9.5, and about 200 pages of paperwork. This is a course that I developed in the early and mid-1990s, and I got it perfected in the by 1996. I had it perfected. And then I did added some small modifications in 2002. And really, law hasn't changed since then. Fundamentals have not changed. They do not change. These are timeless stuff. The only reason 2002 course was I did it was because collection due process hearing started, was a new law that was passed in 1998. And it was a new procedures and new ways to challenge and beat the IRS. So I want to make sure I include that in the course. Otherwise, the rest of the course didn't really change. These are basics of your of the law, your rights, the Constitution, things you want to know, you need to know. Just look and read the table of contents for yourself. And this course is only $300. Been that way for about 18 years now. Only $300. And you can, if you don't have $300, put half or a third down, $100 or $150, and make payments on the rest in the course of a few months. I give you 90-day, 100% unconditional money-back guarantee, which I will extend to 6 months or a year. Just call. I'll be happy to give you more time to listen to it, make sure it's well worth the money, worth a lot more for you to keep it. And if you're that desperate and poor on this course, I'll let you send it back. I'll send you money back. I'll just keep $20 for the shipping and handling. You got free rental on this course, okay? But, folks, you all got $100 at least, $120 to start taking this course. And you're going to be so happy, folks. You will be so happy that you finally found answers and solutions that work. Okay? Now, This is where everybody at the minimum want to be there here. Go back to the previous page, and you go above that, folks. The Quick Start Freedom Package includes 1-hour consultation with me privately, and a level one and that Practical Road to Freedom course combined save you $70. The Beginner Freedom Package includes writing to congressmen and senators about income tax fraud and challenging them. The Simple Freedom Package above that includes unlimited consultation and a criminal legal defense fund to protect you from IRS trying to put you in prison. And the Royal Freedom Package that on the top is the ultimate program, which has a very unique feature added of all the responses, the correspondence of the IRS, the state income tax agencies that need to be done, will be done for you at no extra charge. It's not like you have to pay, this letter is $200, next letter $300, this thing is $400. No. Everything, all the letter writing, responses, these are the options. But I want to make sure you all start at the minimum with a practical road to freedom. Because the stuff I gave you, folks, is just the overview of some of the most key stuff to know, which is don't be afraid. Know the difference. Certified letters generally matter a lot. Regular first-class mail letters can be basically ignored. And I gave you some more fun, more details about these things right now in this call. And in this course, I take even more time to explain these things in more detail for you. Do you think I'm a lawyer? No, not at all. I'm just suggesting that you know the basics of your rights, like you know the basics of your car. You have an engine in your car, transmission, you have a wheel, you have tires, you have struts, you have a radiator, you have a carburetor, you have to change the oil every so often, spark plugs, you know, air filter. I mean, gee, you know all this car parts? Are you a mechanic to know all this stuff? No. You just know there's some basics about cars and how they work and function and gotta be maintained. That's all. That doesn't make you a mechanic. You still have your mechanic to take care of the stuff right. If you want, you can change the oil yourself if you want. Some people do. They change the oil and filter themselves to save a few bucks. Fine. If you want, you can do that. And I'll teach you how to do those things in the legal field. Do as much as you are willing and able to do yourself. And then something you are not able or willing to do or is above your head, Freedom Law School is here to assist you, to back you up. You're not alone. So, having said all that, folks, I want to thank you for being on the call. Now I'm going to get to the next part of the conference call, the second hour, and I'm going to go answer your freedom question. And, folks, remember, the purpose of these question-answer sessions is to help as many people as I can with the same common questions. I'm so busy, folks, privately. People pay me $360 an hour for my one-on-one private consultations. The first 2 hours are discounted to only $240 an hour. But on these conference calls, I try to help you as much as I can for free. And if I can help you for free, I will do so. But remember, you've got a complex case, bunch of letters from the IRS. I'm probably going to need to see your letters to what's going on to give you correct answers, but I'm going to do my best to see if I can direct you without you having to pay Freedom Law School a dime, okay, to help you help yourself. And again, the level one course, a Practical Road to Freedom course, for $300, it saves you a lot of time and money by helping you do a lot of the basic stuff yourself that you can and should be able to do before you come to Freedom Law School. I don't care if you're minimum wage, I don't care if Social Security, you could all afford a practical road to freedom if you commit to freedom. Folks, I paid $1,500, $1,500 back in 1992. That was all the money I had saved up, literally, my life savings, which in today's money was about three times that, maybe $4,500 in today's money to get this untaxing package, which I had not even know what was the content of it. Truly, I didn't know. They told me you got to pay to see what's in it. We don't want this material to get out to other people, you know, unless they pay for it. But I paid for it. Because freedom was a priority for me. Freedom was it? By the way, I did not make a lot of money. I was poor, but I still saved that money for rainy day. You know, because I studied financial planning and money, I knew it's important to save, save, save. I recommend you all save, 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 folks. Anyhow, let's go to your questions, folks. We got a caller from that's been on the call since from a number that didn't show up. All 111 shows. Your number didn't show up, my friend. So if you want to give me your name and then ask your question, my friend, I'll be happy to answer it. But also tell me how you heard about Freedom Law School, if you would please, because I'd like to know how our outreach educational efforts are working to reach American people. So you want to announce yourself, my friend? Do you have a question?
Oh, yeah, I do. My name's Eric. I think I've heard one of your shows in the past before. Calling back in because, you know, I'm applying my rights and taking matters to court, but it's not dealing with the IRS per se. It's more dealing with corruption within a state.
Hold on, let me ask Eric. Eric with a C or a K, by the way. With a C or a K, Eric.
With a C. Okay.
Now, you said you've been on this conference call before, or have you heard them before on YouTube?
I think I've marinated with you before about something similar, but I'm not sure if it's to the same magnitude as it is.
Okay, no problem, my friend. All right. So tell me, what is the problem you're having? Is it the state income tax agency you said, correct, or what is it?
Oh, no. I don't have problems with the IRS. I know how to keep people at bay. My problem is dealing with corrupt federal judges. I've got a matter in a court right now against a state body, someone employed by the state as a state officer, and a judge has
Hold on. Listen, Derek. Listen, yes. My friend. You got to be specific to the point, okay? A case against a state and federal court means nothing. Be specific what you got, my friend. Are you trusted to the state? What agency?
Well, I've got
the
state against there. I've got a Department of Corrections agency and a state court where I am fighting them for trying to reclassify a conviction after a sentence was imposed 19 years ago. They're trying to make a conviction even more strenuous, which draws concerns under the Double Jeopardy Clause of the Fifth Amendment. So when I bring up my actions in a U.S. court, since it does arise under the Constitution, the judge I'm dealing with has shown nothing but unfair practices, disregard for the Constitution, U.S. laws, and some federal laws in his actions. And that, you know, that makes me question his oath. And why do we call this a justice system when justices abused
by... Hold on, Eric. Listen. The other people on the call probably with questions. So there's not, and I'm going to be done in less than an hour. I cannot have you just ramble on, okay?
Right. Well, my question is, when I did a motion of peremptory disqualification challenge of appeal on this judge, how can he order against it on his own accord? Wouldn't that go to another judge?
You would think so, that if you want to get rid of that judge, another judge would decide that. But no, in federal courts, unfortunately, the way they are, I don't like it. I don't agree with it. Most of the judge himself gets to decide it, and he most often says, no, you don't get to get another judge, and that's my decision, unfortunately. But
well, that's kind of basically like going
forward. Hold on. Let me help you, okay? You said you sue in the State Department of Corrections in a federal court. Let me tell you this.
Yes, I am.
I think, generally speaking, almost always, but most often, you need to go to a state court first before you go to federal court, most everything, but not always. Have you gone to state court over the issue? Because the state court does have jurisdiction and power over the Department of Corrections. Why haven't you gone to state court, Eric?
Because they told me that these matters arise under U.S. federal law, so I have to go to a federal court.
So you went to the what state are you from, by the way, Eric?
Indiana, presently.
So you went to Indiana trial-level court, court of appeal, and the Indiana Supreme Court, and now you're in federal court. Is that the case?
No. When I've contacted all these lower courts that you mentioned, they tell me I need to be in a federal court. that the magnitude
Hold on,
of
no,
my
Supreme Court is not a lower court. Wait, stop, stop. You didn't listen to me. Please listen carefully.
Yes.
Indiana Supreme Court is not a lower court, like you said. Neither is the Court of Appeal. There's three levels of courts in level of courts in Indiana. The regular trial court,
right.
You underlined got that. But did you go to the Court of Appeal and the Indiana Supreme Court as well or not? Yes or no?
They wouldn't allow me to. They said I needed to file in the U.S. District Court.
Okay. No, wait. Hold on. You did go there. If you did go there, they told you you could not be there. You did go there already. You tried them already one time then. So you did
I tried to file,
you just
and
you
then they refused my filings.
Well,
because
you know what?
That is on a
the way you're describing it, Eric, to be honest with you, it kind of leaves me very kind of cold, my friend, because your words are very vague, you know, very vague as to why, what's going on. I mean, maybe you do belong in the federal court, but the way you describe things vague, I'm not sure if you've done things right, because the Department of Corrections is definitely a state entity. The state does have full power and jurisdiction over state under state law and the state constitution to do what you want them to do. They will not tell you they have no jurisdiction. They will not tell you we have no power. That does not make sense. You see what I'm saying, Eric?
Well, that's what I've been getting from all these other lower courts.
You're not reading the papers correctly, Eric. You are not reading what the courts have said correctly. Folks, this is a common problem I have with patriots. They don't read the laws carefully.
Oh,
and
sir, I'm not a patriot. I'm an ongoing 20-year civil rights and freedom fighter activist, if you must know. And I do have cases
themselves.
In
the label doesn't matter.
Well, right.
The label doesn't matter.
Well,
the issue is that the average American.
The thing
folks,
is, well, you're trying to belittle me now in front of your audience, sir.
I'm not trying to belittle
the thing
you.
The matter
no, I'm
is,
just telling, hold on.
Well, that's what you
hold
have.
On. I'm going to pause you for a minute, my friend. Hold on. I just pause you for a minute. Let me talk, my friend. I'm not belittling you at all. I'm not blaming you at all. I applaud your courage and your conviction and your willingness to work hard and defend yourself, my friend. I absolutely do, Eric. What I'm trying to say is something different, okay? I'm saying is that, you know, they don't – these laws and these courts are read in such a complex language sometimes, you know, that the average person sometimes doesn't quite understand them correctly and fully. They mislead you. I'm just telling you, my friend, what you're telling me is that legally does not make sense. There's absolutely no reason under the law for the state court not to have power and jurisdiction over Department of Corrections. You know, it just doesn't make sense. You told me that telling you you have to go to federal court because I want to help you. I could tell you what you can do in federal court perhaps, but if you don't belong there in the first place and the state court wasn't done right, you need to go there. So let me suggest this, my friend. You know, what you got also sounds like pretty complex. You want to three levels of courts, you told me. You went to the trial court in Indiana. You went to the, okay. Well, folks, the gentleman hung up. I'm sorry to say that he hung up, but, you know, I cannot help it, but people don't want to hear. And you see, this is what happens. You know, he doesn't like the answer, and I'm trying to help him. And he wants it to be a certain way, but it's not that way. Folks, let me give you a quick lesson on law. America, each state is a country. California, Indiana, Texas, New York, all are separate countries. They have power and jurisdiction over all the state agencies, including the Department of Corrections and the police. So what is this guy telling me, Eric, that the state courts are telling them that they have no jurisdiction to go after the Department of Corrections? That's what they have to go on the federal courts on the U.S. Constitution. Well, the fact is, folks, states are created and operate under the state constitution. And the state constitution and laws protects Eric and everybody else from abuse of power by governmental agencies like the Department of Corrections. So it doesn't make sense for the state courts to say, oh, you got to get out of here. You don't belong here. Go to federal court. That's not what they would say. They would say something different. Maybe what they're saying is that this is an old case. We're going to reopen it again right now. And, gee, maybe you can go to federal court if you want to, but we're not going to look at this for you. We're going to ignore you. Now, that may be the case. But they don't tell somebody, you know, the state courts that, oh, this is our state agency, and you have to go to federal court over it. Because federal government and federal courts are courts of specific, limited jurisdiction and power. In fact, you have to show when you go to federal court that the federal court does have power and jurisdiction to look and rule on the issue you want them to rule, because the way America is made, all power is assumed to be in the state and state courts. All governmental power, unless specifically given through the U.S. Constitution to the federal government and federal courts. So anyhow, now mention that because, folks, I want to answer people's questions, but I want to educate all of you at the same time. That's what my Freedom Law School courses do. So states do have the power to handle most every issue. You go to federal courts generally only after state courts have ruled against you on something wrongfully, and now you bring that issue in a federal court because the state courts did not listen to you as they should have. In a way, the federal courts are like a higher level court, you could say. You know, higher, second class of them. Higher level of court you go to. That's what goes on there. Okay? Very good. Well, I hope that Eric calls or listens to the conference call recording. That helps him out. But that's the kind of situation, folks. I need to see a person's paperwork anyhow. He's got a bunch of stuff that I cannot do on his conference call. It's like trying to help someone with cancer and diabetes by talk show radio program. You cannot do that. You know, it's got a lot going on. They got to have a visit to do a full analysis of his situation. Then, you know, we can perhaps come up with a solution for him. Let's go to our next call from area code 337. If you have a question, my friend, please first announce your first name. Tell me how you.
Hello, my name is Mike. How you doing, Mr. Paymon? How you doing?
Good.
Can you hear me?
How'd you hear about? Yeah, I can hear you good, Mike.
Man, I talked to you, I called one time, man. And I really respect what you're doing 100%. I'm more angry than I am scared of the IRS, man. I'm really kind of peed off at, you know, it's almost like I wish I'd never heard of you, Sherry Peel Jackson, and Joe Bounce. I'm almost beginning to make me think that y'all are agents. You know what I'm saying? Just getting people out here. You know, we don't know nothing about law. They didn't teach us a damn thing. Excuse my language. And I feel, you know, personally connected to you, man, because you wanted some alligator from down, and I was going to get some alligator. And I got kind of peed off. I got busy. And I didn't have time, but let me tell you, let me give my question to you. First of all, I was going to file every 3 to 4 years. I didn't file, and they put a lien against my account, okay? As soon as I drop a little money in there, they put a lien against it, okay? So now, that's my question. What's my next move? I went to my tax agent. She wanted $250 to do the tax. And, you know, I got money in my account, and I can't get it. Okay, that's my situation. I'm too late for all that, but I'm trying to get in school. They say it was free. And I say, you know, $300. It's not here, $300. But it's interesting to know. We need to know. I think we ought to get it in at least 12th grade or 9th or 10th grade or something, 7th grade or less. We need to be introduced to this stuff. But, however, I'm classified as a minority, knowing that I'm the majority because we lost the war. We was the one murdered and slaughtered in the streets, you know, and all a lot of us was already here. We was already here, you know. Choctaw Indians was my people. But do you think anybody told me anything about UCC or being a nationalist? No. We was labeled as NBC, Negro, Black, and Colored. You know what I'm saying? And to see an Iranian come over here and have this stuff set up like you got it set up, man, I don't know if you're a Mason or what, but I got to give you a prop, okay? So I ain't scared, but the young man that just got off the phone, He don't know. He trying. He an activist. I got to give it to him. He an activist. You know, a lot of us need to get active. And I'm trying to get some knowledge in my head. But main thing is now I got to pay him, you know, something to get my accounts up. Okay, because they shut down and I got bill due, so it is what it is. So with that being said, and answer that question to me. What do I do next? Because they already put the lien on me, and, you know, it is what it is.
How much the credit you owe them, the IRS, for what years? How much, Mike, does the IRS...
It don't make no difference, but it don't make no difference what year they own, but, you know, for 14, 15, you know, and 16, I got to pay. Okay, so it's up to, you know, grand. I mean, you know, just give me the information on what, you know, what my next move. I got to pay.
How much they claim you owe them? Yeah, that's a basic question, my friend.
Well, it's coming in. All right, look. Okay, look, a few thousand dollars. I can't give you the exact amount because they got a bunch of lies, thieves, and crooks, man. I can't give you the exact amount, but it's over. I just gave you a rough number. Yeah, yeah, over that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, about 5K. Yeah, about 5K or better. Okay.
Okay, let me make sure I understand you, Mike. Hold on. For your 2014, 15, and 16, IRS wants about $5,000 from you. Right?
Is that correct? Right. Better. It might come with something else, but just give me some understanding on what's my next move. They got the lien on me, so, you know, did my tax agent say, you know, she want about 2 or so, and then they going to take 20%. Is that true? They want 20%, you know.
Hold on.
I'm asking.
This is for years 2014, 15, 16. Did you file 1040 income tax confession forms or not for these years?
No, I didn't even file, man. That's what I'm saying. I didn't even file.
Okay.
I didn't even file.
Okay, you didn't file. All right. Now.
I did not file.
Wait. Hold on. Hold on. Do you have the
copy? You asked me, did I file?
No. Listen to me, to my question, please. Do you have a copy of the IRS's notice of levy, which was sent to your bank, or not? Do you have a copy of that?
Yeah, I got a copy of that. That's my tax agent guy. She's not here right now. Got a copy of that.
10 pages of paperwork before the Commerce Call. I'll review them and go over them for you on the Commerce Call free of charge because I need to see this paperwork to give you better, more specific, accurate answers. I don't have that from Mike, but I'm going to do my best.
Well, hold on. You supposed to be able to give somebody a basic answer with all the knowledge you got, a basic answer. Anybody going to give you the exact information?
Mike, I'm trying to give you an answer, my friend, okay? So
okay, Faymon, give me an answer.
Hold on.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, please don't interrupt me, please. Let me control the conversations. I'm trying to help you and get to everybody. Please don't interrupt me, my friend. Let me get you your question to help you. If you didn't file for 2014, 15, 16, IRS is not after for 2016. It's too early. 2016 tax returns were due April 15th, about a month and a half ago. A lot of people asked for extension until October 15th. The IRS cannot and does not come after you for 2016. Right now, it's impossible. So someone.
Okay, well, let me clear that up. Let me clear that up. Not see, I'm just filing 16. I'm going to file it anyway. It's late because April, I believe, was the deadline. I believe April 15th, something like that. Okay, that was the deadline. So let me clear that up, all right? Not 16, okay? But
you have the letter in front of you.
I'm filing 16. I just told you I don't have the letter with me. My tax agent got that.
Okay. Do you not have a? Okay. So you don't have a copy of it yourself?
I can get a copy, Mr. Paymont. That ain't no problem. I just didn't have it. I left it with the lady.
Listen, you're not even giving the right years. Okay. Because there is no simple magic bullet answers. I wish I could tell you, Mike. I know, Mike, you call me, and I wish I was all powerful.
Oh, okay. So you don't have an answer for somebody that's been living here.
I don't know. I do not have a pat answer, silver bullet, Matt, to want anybody to get off the back. No, of course not. It doesn't work that way. I'm not that great. Nobody is. The government passed laws with a lot of teeth. They don't just say, make a law that, hey, you can come up with something
mm-hmm.
for everybody and beat the government. Because if I can beat a $5,000 case like that, I can beat a $5 billion
right.
case with the same technique. There's no such
right.
thing you're looking for. We've got to look at the paper.
Okay, because I... Okay.
Better.
Well, I thought maybe it was a basic answer. Mm-hmm.
The basic
you need to see the exact paper.
I got to see a paper. See, but remember, I just covered that in the call tonight, my friend. Did you get a notice
right.
of deficiency or not? Don't know that. Did you get a collection due process hearing? I don't know that. All these procedural things matter. Did you give the IRS your address for them to send a letter to you? I need to know that. Okay? What did you do?
Well, yeah, they sent it to my post office box. Yeah, they sent it to my post office box. I set up a payment plan with them a while back and, you know, told them I got into, you know, our contract, worked with a lot of different contracts. I think that last one I got was like 07, urgent, you know, we intend to levy your asset, you know. I mean, you know, they handling a little man like that, man. Urgent, I didn't even much send nothing back. I didn't even call him no more after that. You know, I was just kind of fed
right,
up.
Hold on. So now I got to get a better picture. You had a payment plan with them in the past, you said, and you didn't keep up with it. That's why they're not taking money. The problem is you broke your payment plan with them, my friend. So you got to call the IRS
right.
number on there and
right.
have a new payment plan. You got to get back to your payment plan agreement you have. That's all it is in your case. Okay?
Right. Yeah, I got to get another payment plan agreement.
Yep.
So how long would it take for them? What's the minimum amount in the, you know, certain cases that you're familiar with that after you start pay them a basic pay, how long does it generally take? Now, this is just a general. I mean, I know all of them might be different, but how long does it generally take for them to lift just a basic lien? How long that take?
It could be done within a day. If you get a hold of that person on the phone and talk to them and come up with a new plan, they could lift that levy. It's not a lien, by the way, on your bank account. It's a levy. They could, within one day, they can straighten it out. Okay.
Hit a
how
button
much
and
okay. How much you paid him a month before, Mike? How much was it?
I think I made a payment plan like on 125. I was paying it off my card, not my regular bank card. I went and got me a Walmart card to pay because I ain't trusting. Well, I mean, it don't make no difference with me anyway. So I was, you know, about 125, something like that, you know, a month.
Okay.
And I did.
Yeah, 125, that should be fine. $100 a month, 125, 150. If you start paying them again on that, I think they'll let you do that, my friend. Okay?
So you think I can just give them a call and, you know, once
yep.
I get my next check, you'll go ahead on call them? Because I got my girl there, my tax lady, you know, she want me to bring a piece of alligator meat. And, you know, she going to hook me up for $200. And then she going to, you know, what she talking about a basic, you know, some of the things they doing, I believe we can do ourselves. You know, like get on the phone like I did the first time and set up the payment plan to the paying the tax lady because she wants her money. She wants her money. But,
all you got to do, my friend, okay? Call them again and get back to the payment plan you had before and it should be all good, my friend, okay?
All right. Okay. Well, I'm gonna call your number too and talk to you, man. I really appreciate you, man. And I'm gonna try to get in there. You say you'll take $100 and something for the law school. I'm gonna go out on and try to get that, man, and do some business with you, man. Wake up a little bit because I should have been did it, but you know it is what it is. Yeah.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you for your kind words.
Yeah.
I very much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Paymont. Appreciate everything. 83-813-44-4800. Okay.
Right. 813-444-4800 is Field Law School's phone number. Yes, my friend. You got it.
Okay.
Okay, folks, we got a half hour left. go to our, you welcome Mike. Let's go to our next caller. Area code 469. I believe you have a question. Give me your first name, my friend. Area code 469. How you heard about us? And then your question.
Robert from Dallas.
Is that Robin you said?
Robert.
Oh, Robert. Robert. Yes,
Robert.
From Dallas. Robert. Yes, my friend. How did you hear about Freedom Law School?
Well, I know you came on. It's Robert Hudak.
I'm sorry. Could you speak up, please?
I said, you know me. I'm Robert Hudak.
Oh, hey, Robert. How you doing? Long time no hear. You don't want to get last name on this conference call, Robert. You know, for privacy reasons, okay? Yes. Because remember, these calls are public calls, just like a radio program, a call-in show. So, you know, anybody could be spying on you or me and listen to this call, including the IRS. So first name is all we need, my friend, to help you out. Robert, good to hear you from you, my friend. What's going on? How can I help you?
Well, I think I listened to the first part of the broadcast. I think I kind of got my answers. Basically, what happened was in 2014, I sent the IRS a letter for requesting a court hearing. And I obviously didn't change my address when I moved, and I assumed that, you know, if you fill out a change of address, if they send you something and don't get there, then they'll find out where you live. It wouldn't seem like it'd be that complicated, but obviously it doesn't sound like that's the way it works. But you know, I sent that letter in 2014, never heard anything, and then I had Social Security money coming through, and I had some medical stuff that I was making payments on, and all of a sudden I start noticing that the Social Security money is getting less and less, and I give them a call, and they said, well, you know, we're sending you the exact amount that we told you we're sending you, but the IRS put a tax lien on your money. And so my feeling was, even if I didn't change the address, can they just do that with no notification or sure anything from me?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question. What was your question? Could you repeat that, please, Robert?
I said in 2014, I sent a letter to the tax court, and I didn't change my address when I moved, which obviously I should have done, but I thought if they send you something and it got sent back, then it wouldn't seem like it'd be too hard for them to figure out where you live. But in the last couple of months, I've had money coming out of my Social Security. When I contacted Social Security, they just said, well, we're sending you all your money, but the IRS has put a tax lien on your money,
right,
for the taking $288.
You know what? I'm sorry, Rob. I got your question. So you asked me what you could do. I'm afraid at this stage, without whatever that tax year, tax issue you went to tax court for or about, you lost it. Because when you left to a different location, you did not give the tax court or the IRS lawyer or the IRS your new address. So you did not get the correspondence from the tax court about what's going on in that case, nor did you get nothing from the IRS lawyer. So you did not timely probably respond to the orders of the court, and you ended up losing that case in the tax court. And you ended up getting a judgment against you now that says you owe them that much money. And now with that judgment, they're coming to take a part of the Social Security check that you get every month. So there's really, unfortunately, there's nothing you can do about that, because well, it was a big mistake, my friend, to move and not give them your address. I wish I could have an answer, but that's the worst thing. Actually, you would have been better off not to go to tax court at all and lose it that way, because later on you could have paid the tax and sued for a refund. But by going to tax court, you had your chance to litigate these issues in a court, and now you cannot charge his taxes for those years at all. It's done. It's history. I'm afraid there's nothing me or anybody could do in that situation. That's why, folks, it's all important. Again, make sure you give your change of address to the IRS. If you're in tax court or federal court, let the court know. Let the government lawyer know. The address change is very important so you get the communication. It's not up to them. It's up to you to let the other side know what your address is. Anything else, Robert? I may be able to assist you with, my friend.
So at this point, should I give him my address?
Absolutely. You should give him your address. Write the letter to the IRS. And in Austin, Texas, I think there's an IRS office near you. And by certified mail, write him a simple letter telling them your name, address, slave, surveillance number, social security number, and tell them what your new address is. Give me your old address and new address, both.
Okay. And I guess at that point, they would send me some information on what it's all about.
I'm not sure what you mean by they give you information, but what it's all about. If you want to know what
well, I mean, how much they're...
How much you owe them.
All right.
How much you owe them, just call the IRS. No, just call them. Just call them, Robert. Tell them, you know, call the IRS and give me your name and SS number, slave surveillance number. And ask them how much you owe, what's going on. Get a printout, they'll mail it to you, or they'll tell you go on IRS.gov. You can go to IRS.gov, their website, and put your information on there, and they'll give you access to your information about how much you owe the IRS type of thing.
Okay.
So you could do it that way as well.
Appreciate the advice.
You're welcome, my friend. Anything else I can help you with, Robert?
No, that's the main thing. I just need to take some action on this and figure out. You know, obviously I screwed up, so I'm gonna have to just see where I stand at this point.
Yeah, I'm afraid that chapter is done. It's gonna take its course. But for other years, Robert, you wanna be better prepared, my friend. That's the key. Sometimes you gotta take the mistakes of the past and just don't repeat them for the future. That's the best that you can do.
Yeah.
Okay, Robert?
Okay, man. Appreciate it.
You're welcome, Robert. Good to hear from you, my friend. Let's go to other calls you have on the call. We have someone from area code 805 with a question. If you have a question, call from area code 805. Please give me your first name, how you heard about Freedom Law School, and then your question, please. Question there. Let's go to our caller from area code 818. If you have a question from area code 818, please announce yourself, my friend. No question there. How about a call from area code 972? If you have a question, please announce yourself the call from area code 972. No question there. Let's go to the call from area code 864. If you have a question, please announce yourself. Okay, nobody has questions there. Let's go to the call from area code 267. Please announce yourself if you have a question. Question there. Okay, we have one more call from area code 732. If you have a question, call from area code 732. Please announce yourself now. Okay, no questions there. Well, folks, it's been my pleasure to be with you on this Commerce Call. Remember, Freedom Law School at livefreenow.org is your source for freedom and education. Other sites of interest will be Freedom Church, freedomchurch.org, our parent organization, jurypower.org, is a sister organization about jury power, grand jury power, to go after corrupt government officials. And, folks, tell your friends about Freedom Law School, a unique source. Become a fan of Freedom Law School on Facebook. We'll be in touch with you there also. And be sure to call back on a regular basis if you like. And lastly, remember, we're putting a lot of good information and education on our YouTube channel. Go to youtube.com and type in Freedom Law School. Our channel will come up with a lot of good information there for you, answering a lot of the common questions and concerns that you have. Thank you for being with me, everybody. Have a good night. I'll be back with you again next Thursday night.